Welcome back to the Fantasy Finessers Podcast. I'm Colin Kapoor. Join me as always, we got Maddie Wasserman in the house. Maddie, it's been a while, but we're back. How you doing?
I'm doing good. You know, the voice is doing too great, but the rest of me is good. I'm excited to get back to some fantasy football talk. It's been a while since we did our off-season update, our last episode, but I'm pumped to be back. We got a lot to talk about for our preseason edition.
Yeah, fantasy football season is getting back into full swing. NFL football season, preseason week one just wrapped up. Draft season is beginning for fantasy. People are starting to do their fantasy drafts, make their fantasy teams. It's a bit early for my taste. I prefer to wait until September to start drafting, but people are drafting, so let's help them out. Starting out with we're going to start today with the top picks in the draft. And, you know, the easy debate here is Jonathan Taylor, Christian McCaffrey at the 101. Maddie, what are you thinking for the top pick in the fantasy draft?
Well, while I don't think this is really one of the top years to have the number one pick, there are some years, whether you look back to McCaffrey for the last couple years before that, Le'Veon Bell, other players where it was David Johnson, one of your obvious number one picks. And while Jonathan Taylor is in most leagues going as the number one pick, I don't necessarily think it's as obvious as past years. I mean, when you look at last year's production, obviously, if it was going to be the same as last year, there's no doubt that it's 332 carries last year. Ridiculous. 18 rushes. Touchdowns. He's still 40 receptions. But I think the reason why there's a little bit of trepidation there is because you expect the workload to decrease. It was an astronomical load that he got a season ago. I don't quite think it's going to be the same this year, but I'm not really sure if that matters when talking about the number one pick, because there's really no one else better. I personally don't think McCaffrey is reliable enough to be the number one pick. Obviously, you know, the production, he's only played 10 games the last two seasons. The production has never wavered for McCaffrey. When he's been on the field, he's been as good as ever. And, you know, there's optimism because those injuries he's dealt with the last 2 years are soft tissue injuries, things that you expect to heal, and he'll be fine off of it. As he enters his sixth season in the league, you think that that'll improve. But I ultimately just don't think it's reliable enough based on what we've seen the last two seasons to merit the first overall pick. So even with the concept that Taylor's going to regress off of his rushing totals from a season ago, I still think he's valuable and worth that number one pick.
Yeah, at the top of the draft, you're always looking for consistency and stability. Jonathan Taylor does give that to you. I do see, like you said, a little bit of regression coming. He led the entire league in breakaway runs, something that I feel like you could consider to be a little bit fluky. The talent, of course, for Taylor is not in question. There are reports that his workload is going to be dialed back a little bit. Personally, I want McCaffrey 101, if we're being totally honest. But picking second, honestly, you have that decision made for you to start with. So that may actually be better than picking first overall. So you don't have to make that decision for yourself. But McCaffrey, I mean, he played four games last year with a 50% snap share or better, averaged 26 points per game. Every time I see him, I don't see him as an injury prone running back because there weren't any major surgeries in the last 2 years. No torn ligaments or completely torn ligaments, nothing like that. Nothing that really tells me that he's not going to be able to bounce back. So I like McCaffrey as 101, and I think you know he's on pace for another, you know, McCaffrey-esque season. Rushing and receiving is something Taylor doesn't give you, is that, you know, exceptional receiving ability and the just monumental target share that McCaffrey commands whenever he's on the field. Offense wise, McCaffrey's obviously in a worse situation than Jonathan Taylor is, but McCaffrey has proved himself to be game script proof while on the field. Taylor, maybe not so much. There are games where he's off the field in 2 minute drills, off the field on third downs. Nyheim Hines is there as well, taking away targets and routes run and things like that. So for me, it's McCaffrey all the way, but I completely understand wanting that stability out of your first overall pick or your first round pick. So it's a win-win situation getting either of these guys. But of course, in football, injuries happen, and McCaffrey has disappointed fantasy managers for two straight years. So I totally get wanting to stay away from him this season.
And by the way, McCaffrey, he played five full games, got hurt in the sixth, still 15th in the league in receiving yards for running backs. So with a full season, he had three less receptions last year than Taylor had the entire year. So especially in PPR, you look towards that. If they both stay healthy for the full season, I think McCaffrey would be first. It's just that we haven't seen it in a couple years, and you worry about the Panthers potentially trying to limit that workload at least to an extent now that he's there. So I think that would be the main trepidation with him. But I think then, you know, you go down further on beyond that on the draft board after you get through those first two picks. I think that's when things start to get more interesting, because you have Cooper Kupp and Justin Jefferson, who I think are pretty clearly the next established receivers. And then you have Austin Ekeler. And that decision is something that's interesting to me, whether you go with that receiver or you go with Ekeler, because obviously in PPR format, Ekeler is going to have a lot more value. But I still wouldn't take Ekeler above either of those two receivers.
Yeah, that's interesting for me to hear, because I would 100% go Ekeler above the receivers. I'm always I'm a big proponent of picking running backs first. That's kind of how I've been, my fantasy strategy the entire time I've been playing fantasy. And I mean, Ekeler, he's one of the backs that's going to maybe regress in the touchdown department. That's perfectly conceivable on the running side. But on the receiving side, he just has that PPR floor. 70 receptions last year, which was second in the league in terms of running backs. 20 total touchdowns, obviously probably not going to happen again, like we were just saying. But fantasy points per opportunity is third in the league at 1.15. He takes advantage of the opportunities he gets, and he's going to get a lot of opportunities in a very high-powered offense. I think we can say the Chargers are a better offense than the Colts and the Panthers are going to be, with Justin Herbert there, Keenan Allen, Mike Williams. There's a lot of weapons here. They're going to be on the goal line a lot. They're going to be in the red zone a lot. Justin Herbert's not going to siphon off a lot of rushing touchdowns. It's not really what he does. And, you know, maybe Eckler's going to lose some goal line carries. He doesn't profile as much of a goal line back as, you know, other, you know, Derrick Henry or whatever it may be, Dalvin Cook. But I see Ekeler as an easy top three pick, and I would love to have him, if we're being honest. Expected fantasy points per game as well, you know, 17.8, seventh in the league. That's just, whenever he's on the field, he makes things happen. There were reports last year that he's going to be the Alvin Kamara of the offense, and he was. He was exceptional last season. And he's obviously not being undervalued, because he's going, you know, third amongst running backs. But I really think he's going to be great this season. You know, the receptions, the targets are there. It's the same situation as it was last year in terms of weapons on this Chargers offense. There's no one coming in to really siphon off any more targets. Keenan Allen, Mike Williams are still there, which, you know, maybe is unfortunate for Ekeler. But Ekeler, you know, his role is set in stone. Red zone touches as well. Last year, he was second in the league amongst running backs. 10 goal line touches, 63 red zone touches. He's used in all aspects of the field. He is shown to be resistant to major injuries. I think Ekeler is a slam dunk pick anywhere you can get him. If you're fifth overall and Ekeler is available, I see that as an absolute win. I think he is going to be fantastic this season. Efficiency is off the board, you know, receiving metrics off the board. He ran 393 routes last season. He's just all over the place in this offense, and I see Ekeler as I see him finishing as the RB3. Just that's where I rank him, but it's entirely conceivable that he has a McCaffrey-esque 2019 season where he goes 1,000. I feel like that's possible.
Here's my hesitation with Ekeler. I think Ekeler's the highest floor pick pretty much you can have outside of probably Taylor in this draft, just in terms of last year he eclipsed 10 points in every game the entire season. So, you know, there's no doubt that with the receptions comes a level of consistency, especially in BPR formats, that he's never going to really sink below. But I'm not sure if he really has the top five ceiling this year. You mentioned the 20 touchdowns a season ago, the rushing touchdowns. That could be cut in half this season, practically speaking. And then that drops him down further in the running back rankings. Obviously, like, you know, he's 27 now at this point. You bring in Isaiah Spiller as the backup there to maybe get some more work. This is a Chargers team that has aspirations of going far in the playoffs. You know, you might want to curtail Eckler's workload a bit. You mentioned the high-powered offense. I think when we're talking about top five fantasy running backs, that's not necessarily always a positive thing. So while Ekeler is no doubt a first-round value and someone that is going to be really good, there's almost no version of Ensign Eckler's healthy that he's not a top 10 running back. Having that really high-end value, it's probably going to regress a little bit this year. And I sort of say that in the context of those two receivers that I talked about. I think Justin Jefferson is probably the receiver that should go off the board first. I mean, obviously Cooper Kupp a season ago, we know the stats. He was ridiculous. He led the NFL in snaps, targets, receptions, receiving yards, touchdowns, touches, yards per run. Like, every conceivable category, he led them in. But when you look for regression versus ascension, Justin Jefferson has the direct up arrow. I mean, he was ridiculous a season ago. This was an amazing player. I mean, he was amazing as a rookie. When you saw 1,400 yards as a rookie, you knew it was going to be ridiculous. But he went to another level last season. He got 167 targets, and that number probably is only going to go up this year. 10 receiving touchdowns. I could see that going up too again. Like Jefferson, I think, was great a season ago, and I think he only might go higher this year. And I think that's why, if you're looking at the number three pick, that's where I would go.
Yeah, I see Justin Jefferson as well as I think he's going to be the top receiver. Cooper Kupp has, you know, he has more competition coming in, Allen Robinson, but there were a lot of mouths to feed in that offense last year, and Kupp was always first in line. But one thing that does give me concern is Matt Stafford. He has that elbow issue, something that was described as worse than, you know, a common tendonitis, something that you see in MLB pitchers, which gives me a lot of pause on Matt Stafford as well as Cooper Kupp, because we don't know, like we know Sean McVay's offense ran through Cooper Kupp last year, but does the second string quarterback in this offense, will he be able to get it to Cooper Kupp as much as Stafford did? And just going back to Eckler for a second, you made a good point about Isaiah Spiller, you know, a higher 123rd pick, draft pick by Chargers, not necessarily the highest end draft pick, but he's been impressing in camp. Reports have been saying that Joshua Kelly has been leading up the charge to be the backup to Austin Eckler. So there is a lot of intrigue there behind Eckler. Spiller, I think later in the season, is going to have more of a defined role. He's a bigger back than Eckler is. He could get a goal line role, get a siphon off a few of those goal line touches, like you were saying, lead to that touchdown regression for Eckler. So that is a great point in terms of the backups to Eckler, Isaiah Spiller, Joshua Kelly. So that definitely is a concern. I still see Eckler as the number three pick in the draft. But going into the later picks, there's Derrick Henry, there's Dalvin Cook. There's a lot of these running backs that, you know, Henry had a lot of injury trouble last season. Dalvin Cook, you know, he was fine last year. As a Dalvin Cook fantasy manager last year, he was relatively unspectacular. Alexander Mattison honestly had more production in his spot starts than Cook did. But going past those two wide receivers, past the fifth pick in the draft, Matty, where are you looking? Are you looking at the running backs? Are you looking maybe at Travis Kelce early or in the middle of the first round? Where are you trying to go in the middle of the first round here?
I'm going Najee Harris here. Now, the important thing I think to contextualize with Harris is that you're not doing this based off real life value. On real life, his 3.9 yards per carry last year, it was objectively not good. Like, he was not efficient. He was also put in a bad situation. But what's most important is that he was given a lot of work. He was given 307 carries a season ago, and while only 7 rushing touchdowns, he was put in position to score a lot more, and I think that number is going to tick up this year just based on the amount of work that he had, especially in the red zone area. That's only going to go up too. So I think from a workload perspective, he's one of the most reliable picks you can have in the first round. While the ceiling of Derrick Henry and Dalvin Cook, two guys you just mentioned, may be higher based off of the past production we've seen from them, I think this season Najee Harris is the answer, because he's going to be the featured back in Pittsburgh, and you know, this is a pure volume play. You know, he was second among running backs in carries, first in snaps, touches, routes. Like, this guy, he's going to get the volume that you want to see. And, like, he's positioned for a similar role. And I think no matter what his floor, he has to be an RB1 just based off the amount of volume he's going to get. And the ceiling is higher based on whether he can improve that efficiency off a season ago. So I feel like he's much more reliable than Henry, who's, you know, getting a little bit older. It feels like he's a freak and not human at times, but, like, he is getting older. You mentioned Dalvin Cook regressed a little bit last season. So I think if you want to go running back mid-first round, Harris is your guy over those other two.
Yeah, Harris, there's a lot to back up in the underlying metrics of what you were saying. The offense was just so bad last season.
So bad.
It's incredible how Harris was able to return RB1 value, just constant.
And by the way, it might not be
touches.
That much better this season, but I'm not sure if it matters.
I am fully aboard the Mitch Trubisky train. We've talked about this last season on the podcast. I wanted Mitch Trubisky to be my Commanders quarterback. I stand by that. I think he's going to be fine. But also, you know, Kenny Pickens is there as the rookie. But just going into some of the things under the hood with Harris, he faced stack boxes, you know, an enormous amount of the time, 70%+ stack box rate. And then also, look at his efficiency. He created 1,035 yards, which is number two in the league. And he ran for 1,300 yards. That's insane how many yards after first contact that and yards that weren't blocked for him that he was able to create. The efficiency was crazy. If you look under the hood, and 3.8 yards per carry is not great, 3.9 yards per carry, but also he evaded the second most tackles in the league. He was eighth in the league in breakaway runs. Like, he's, the talent is clear. The speed is clear for a guy his size. The only issue is the offense, right? It just remains to be seen if he's going to be able to, you know, consistently do what he did last year. And I see the ceiling. The ceiling is crazy if he gets these touches and then is able to up the efficiency. So I see Harris. I think he's going to be great. I honestly would rather have Joe Mixon than Najee Harris. I've seen Mixon go in the later end of the first round. I think Mixon is going to be a stud this season. What are your thoughts on Joe Mixon getting into the 7th, 8th picks of the first round?
I'd stay away from Mixon at that range. I mean, like, I understand the reasons why he's up there. You expect the Bengals offense to take another leap forward, obviously. And, you know, he had a career high last year in pretty much every major stat, in carries and receiving yards and touchdowns. Everything was at his career best level last year. I don't really see the room for that to go up again this season. I just think, like, last season was pretty much his, what the ceiling is going to be. The offensive line, they obviously did make improvements this year to that, but I don't really see Mixon going much better. So I think you get him early second round, I'm good with that, but not a lot higher. Another guy that I'm a little bit questionable about is, I see Davante Adams being floated as like a mid to late first round pick. Like, I don't know where that's coming from. He's not in Green Bay anymore. We obviously know how good he was there, but this is a totally different offense. That was a totally new situation. Why? I don't understand how Adams is going at a place where you're drafting for his pass value when he's in a completely new situation.
Yeah, Adams' ADP on Fantasy Pros is 11th overall.
Crazy.
Right at the end of that first round, which is very interesting to me. You know, there is the narrative he played with Derek Carr in college. There's not too many mouths to feed in this Raiders offense. There's Darren Waller there, but other than that, it's Adams, it's Waller, and it's Hunter Renfrow, right? Hunter Renfrow, you know, he was a breakout last season. Adams is probably going to tank Renfrow's value a little bit. But in terms of Davante Adams, we talked about this in our offseason podcast. The value for Adams got a little bit lower, obviously moving away from Aaron Rodgers. But I think that acquisition just helped Derek Carr more so than it, you know, helped Davante Adams. So I would, you know, agree with you there. Maybe try and stay away from Adams at the turn. But if you can get him, you know, if he falls down to the middle of the second round, go for him. I think, you know, his ADP among wide receivers is fourth overall, or fourth among wide receivers. So Diggs is still ahead of him. I would take Stephon Diggs ahead of Davante Adams as well. And, you know, it is, I at the turn, I would rather have a running back than I would have Davante Adams. I think looking at DeAndre Swift, I'm very high
on. Yeah, hang on. Let's talk about Swift for a second, because Swift is getting the old Hard Knocks boost, which is usually
true.
Swift is true. Now, Hard Knocks boosts are traditionally applied to teams, not fantasy players. But it might be so extreme for anyone that's watched the most recent episode of Hard Knocks with the coaching staff.
I have not watched it.
All right, I won't spoil, but if anyone has watched, you know, you would know DeAndre Swift right now, the coaching staff talking him up, how they want him to be the best player in the offense, and they think he can thrive. And last year, they pretty much lived up to that. He was on the field for 72% of Detroit snaps before he got hurt late in the season. But, you know, he's positioned for an even bigger role this year, and I think that he's ready for it. Yeah, there's a little bit of bust potential just because that Lions offense, you know, it has more mass defeated. It's not going to be the highest scoring team. He's not going to get the most red zone chances. They're going to be behind in a lot of games again this season. They're probably not winning that many games. But this is a legitimate top five upside, in my opinion, that you can get in the early to mid second round. I think if you go receiver in the first round, like we just said, if you go with someone like a Davante Adams, like a Deebo Samuel, like a Stephon Diggs, this is a great guy to pair with him. And I think better than a Mixon or Kamara, someone like that, just because he comes with an upside that I don't think either of those guys have. I think he's a really intriguing pick.
Yeah, DeAndre Swift, for me, we talked about this last year. I thought he was going to finish in the top five if he stayed healthy, and he was on that track.
He was on it, yeah.
Yeah, last season, number one among running backs in yards created per touch, which is a stat that is all yards above and beyond what was blocked. And so yards created by the runner after the first evaded tackle. And he was number one in that. He was above Jonathan Taylor. He was above Dalvin Cook. He was above all of these running backs, of course, in a smaller sample size because he didn't play the entire season. But the talent obviously is not a question for DeAndre Swift. He is incredibly efficient. He is useful in the passing game, though. issues there. Jamal Williams is there. He's a bigger back than DeAndre Swift.
Same as last year. Better...
He was last year, exactly. So, you know, I see Swift as a very good early second, maybe middle second round pick. If you can get him there, I think that's an easy pick. Pairing them up with a wide receiver. If you're picking in the middle of the first round, you get Justin Jefferson and somehow DeAndre Swift falls to you. That's just an a fantastic start to your draft. I see that as really good. And I think Swift, you know, you mentioned the Hard Knocks boost. That may be a bit of a narrative, but as we get further into draft season, I expect Swift to go at the end of the first round above names like DeAndre or Davante Adams, above names like maybe even Joe Mixon, like you were saying. I really like Joe Mixon this season. I think an end of first round turn of Mixon Swift is entirely plausible, and I think that's a great RB core to anchor your team. But you mentioned this name kind of in passing. Alvin Kamara has been reported that he's not going to face any discipline this season for his legal troubles, his battery charge. And so he's currently being, in my opinion, undervalued. I've seen him going at the end of the second round. I think as time goes on, like you said, this is kind of early in draft season. I see him moving up to the end of this or beginning of the second round. But what are your thoughts on Kamara, Maddie? I mean, we saw him be relatively inefficient last season. Jameis Winston got hurt early in that season, but Winston's back. This offense looks to be a lot more explosive. They added Chris Olave, Jarvis Landry there as well, Michael Thomas, of course. So where are you seeing Kamara fit into all these running backs and this kind of pantheon of high-end running backs in the beginning of the draft?
I think he's a lot more risky than any of the guys you've talked about so far, just because the uncertainty. You look at his 66% catch rate, a career low. No coincidence that comes in the first year after Drew Brees retires. Winston is not really a check down guy in the same way, especially a late career Drew Brees was. And that was where Kamara most thrived. Those seasons that he started at the beginning of his career when his ascent sort of came as Drew Brees was on the back end of his career, and that duo really worked out for Kamara. But I think he's a little riskier. You mentioned the suspension thing. That does look like that's not going to be a factor. But even regardless of that, there's a lot of question marks around him that, you know, there's no Sean Payton there anymore. Obviously, the offense is supposed to stay similar, but, you know, there's just a lot of question marks around him. You mentioned Michael Thomas comes back. They add Chris Olave. There's more weapons in this offense. There's more other places to go in the air than just Kamara. You probably see him lining up less outside. So I ultimately think that, like, the upside's clearly there for Kamara to probably surpass guys like Mixon or Swift in the best-case scenario, but I just think it's too risky to take above those guys. I think you target Kamara in late second round, but I wouldn't take him above that. I just think it's too much of a reach for the amount of uncertainty, because I think, like, right in the first round, like, at least my philosophy with it is you want to mitigate risk as much as you can, and people that aren't going to be busts. I think when we look at busts that can happen in the first two rounds, Kamara is a guy that is probably one of the top guys on that list for me.
Yeah, we're not going to hit on every single name at the top of the draft here, but looking at Kamara, I completely agree with you. There was a lot of teeth gnashing last season about his lack of receiving. He was getting so many carries, wasn't targeted in the receiving game. There was that infamous Ian Book game against the Dolphins where he was just off the field inexplicably. I don't think that's going to happen with Jameis Winston, but there is a lot of risk there. And now that we're kind of in the beginning, middle, and second round, it becomes time to think about the tight end position. Travis Kelce, Mark Andrews, and Kyle Pitts are the three tight ends that are going earliest. What are your thoughts on picking a tight end early, and where are you targeting a tight end in your fantasy drafts?
Oh, I think this year sets up really well to target an early tight end because it's not that early. I think last year, you know, this is something we talked about a season ago, when Kelce was going in the mid-first round, I think that was a little bit high for a tight end because then you had trouble filling out the rest of your roster. But the way tight ends are going this year, where the first one is generally in most drafts going off the board in the middle of the second round or around that range, something like somewhere pick 16 to 20 range is when you get the first tight end off the board. I think it's good value to get one of those top two guys. I'm not sure Pitts really factors for me quite in that conversation just because I think you're banking on more of, you know, future progression rather than something we've already seen. But I think, you know, Mark Andrews is probably the guy here. It's attempting to go with Kelce for the obvious reasons of the production he's had over his Hall of Fame career, and they lose Tyreek Hill, and he's the number one guy. But there's more questions about, like, there was legitimate regression from Kelce a season ago, and he took a real step back. You know, like, yes, he finished first at the position in routes, touchdowns, and, you know, he was in the top five in targets and receptions and all, like, the stuff that you expect from Kelce. But, like, also his snaps have been coming down lower in the last few years, and, you know, he's getting older at this point. He's about to turn 33, and I think Mark Andrews is the bona fide number one in the Ravens offense. And while, yes, the Ravens offense, the passing game is not nearly what the Chiefs is, I think that Mark Andrews is reliable. Andrews bested Kelce a season ago for the top tight end performance. We know what Kelce did in the postseason last year, fantasy postseason last year. But
yes.
But kind of setting that part aside, I think while it's tempting to say you want Kelce off the board first just because of the name recognition and the seemingly outside circumstances, I think you kind of got to fight that temptation and go for Andrews.
Yeah, I 100% agree there. Andrews, an interesting stat for him. He led all tight ends in PPR scoring, and he did not have a consistent quarterback. Lamar Jackson missed five games. There was Tyler Huntley. I believe there was Josh Johnson. The third stringer came in, if I'm remembering correctly.
He's played on like 20 teams.
Well, you know, it's tough to remember.
Including yours.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. But Kelce obviously is the embodiment of consistency at the position. Six straight seasons with 1,000 receiving yards. He was tight end one, I believe, for five straight seasons until Mark Andrews unseated him last year. And I completely agree with what you're saying about trying to target one in the middle of the second round. For me, I remember we did our fantasy New Year's resolutions, and I said I'm not going to wait on tight end.
My family league actually drafted
very early, which I was not too happy about, and I had the 10th pick. I picked Andrews in the second round, so I picked him at the turn, and I honestly don't like the way my draft turned out after that. I made a few mistakes in terms of drafting. We don't have to get into that, but having that tight end early, it definitely just takes a weight off your chest, and that's something that I think a lot of fantasy managers like, especially those who don't feel like streaming the position. Thinking about Kyle Pitts, I honestly think taking him not in the second, but around the early third, middle third, I think that's a great value for him. I think the upside is immense for Kyle Pitts. There's more people in that offense, so he's probably not going to get double teamed as much. And Marcus Mariota, you know, he might be honestly one of the better quarterbacks in terms of profile for Pitts, just the kind of guy that's just going to kind of throw it up and let Pitts make the play. Maybe not the most accurate quarterback in Marcus Mariota. But thinking about these tight ends and then the other options that are available there. So at the 2-3 turn or the 2-3 turn where Kyle Pitts is taken, there's names like Javonte Williams going. Travis Etienne is up there as well. What do you think about these kind of unproven backs in Etienne and Williams who have immense upside?
I think Javonte Williams has been going far too early in drafts. I think if there's one guy that I'm staying away from, it's Javonte Williams. Not because Javonte Williams, the player, isn't a really good player, but situationally, I think we're just, like, ignoring the fact that, like, Melvin Gordon's, like, has, like, an ADP, and, like, he's, like, going the ninth round. And meanwhile, like, he got almost the same amount of carries last season as Javonte Williams. Yeah, Javonte Williams is, you know, the power back. He's more explosive. He clearly looks like he's the better back on the field. But Melvin Gordon, like, he's still there, and I don't think we can just discount him as being like, well, you know, the Broncos, they're going to see the talent of Javonte Williams, and then they're going to move off Gordon, and it's going to be the Williams show. You know, like, that could have happened last year, and it didn't, because they want to use this platoon, and they're a good 1-2 punch for real football. Obviously, it's frustrating for fantasy managers, but in real life, that works as a 1-2 punch, and I don't he's going in the, you know, mid-second round, and, you know, it was a full split last year with Melvin Gordon, so, you know, like, he played 51% of the snaps. It was a dead split. And, you know, yeah, he can contribute both rushing game, passing game. He had 43 receptions a season ago. But, like, even with Russell Wilson coming there, I just don't see Javonte Williams. Like, even if you get that number to 60, 65%, Melvin Gordon's still going to be there. He's still going to take a lot of those goal line carries. Williams, I think he's just being drafted a little bit too high for my taste.
Yeah, I think I agree with you on the fact that Williams is being overvalued a little bit. I think a lot of it has to do with the fantasy community just wanting to see this guy get 80% of the touches.
And by the way, the same thing's happening where, like, Aaron Jones is going in, like, the second round, and then you're waiting, like, a million rounds for A.J. Dillon to go, like, AJ Dillon can go 70 picks later than Aaron Jones, and they're in like a dead split. Like, this is happening, and this is not the only scenario of this happening, where it's more like people are hoping for it not to be a split. But the evidence in the situation in Green Bay, and certainly the situation in Denver, doesn't really point to anything changing in terms of a split, regardless of what we want that to look like.
Yeah, Fantasy Pros ADP has Javonte Williams at the RB11. Melvin Gordon going way later down in the RB20s, maybe in some drafts as low as RB30s. So there's value with Melvin Gordon, 100%. Gordon, you know, the skill set doesn't align with Williams at all. Williams had the highest broken tackle rate of any running back last season. And Gordon was up there as well. I believe he was 10th with a 9% rate, but Williams up there was 17%, which is just crazy. The talent obviously is not a question for Williams, but I think a lot of it has to do with, like I said, the fantasy community just really wants Williams to get more than 50% of the snaps. I see it this season as being a 65-35 at the end of the season, but in the beginning of the season, we're probably going to see more 50-50, and someone who drafts Javonte Williams with their third pick in the third round is probably going to be disappointed in the first few weeks of the season with Williams. He could break off a big play. He could get a couple goal line carries, but you want consistency out of the top of your draft, and Williams could offer that late in the season or in the middle of the season, but I don't necessarily see that happening early in the season, which could disillusion people from drafting him early. And I see him as someone that if there is that 50-50 split that you can probably try to acquire on the cheaper later in the season, maybe in the middle, you don't have to pay third round value for him. You can, you know, trade a guy who had a couple breakout weeks in the first few weeks of the season and try to acquire Williams. But going on to ETN in the preseason, he obviously, James Robinson had an Achilles injury, so Achilles tear last season, so not in the preseason roster for the Jaguars. But ETN played on Jacksonville's first 20 offensive snaps, only managed 23 yards on 9 carries, but he got 3 targets in the passing game, caught one of those for 10 yards. I see ETN as a breakout this season, played with Lawrence over in Clemson, led the country in receiving yards, ranked second in receptions in his senior season. ADP right now at RB21, so not going where Williams is going. I misspoke there, but ETN going around at the end of the third round with Javonte going at the end of the second, beginning of the third. I see ETN with some crazy value here, honestly, at RB21. I think he can finish in the top 15 of the position. And another thing to note with Robinson, there's not a lot of history of running backs coming back and returning to form after suffering a full Achilles fracture, something that James Robinson suffered. So Robinson is working his way back. I see ETN as a guy that he can probably play on all three downs. He's probably not going to, just given, you know, the size of ETN. He's not one of the biggest backs. Robinson profiles as a bigger back than he does, but ETN has the opportunity to be one of the best receiving backs in the league. Trevor Lawrence is looking to take a step forward. I see him as Lawrence himself as a sleeper at the QB position. So what do you think about ETN at his current draft position? Do you think he's going to be a breakout running back, or do you think it's kind of the same thing as Williams, that there could be a timeshare in the Jacksonville backfield?
So you're all in on the ETN hype train, I see.
Big time.
Judging by your 3 paragraphs of ETN notes in the prep doc, I can see you're an ETN guy. I'm not, you know, like, I think ETN is good value. I agree. I'm not all in. I don't think he's going to be like some magical top 10 back. I don't think he's going to see the workload for that. And, you know, coming off the injury from a season ago, a lost year, this is essentially a rookie year for him. Like, I think with James Robinson already there and established, I think they're going to want to rotate them. ETN obviously can be used more as a receiver too in a PPR. We don't quite know what that's going to look like. A season ago, Urban Meyer floated like converting ETN to a full-time receiver, which is like not going to happen, but there are elements of him being really strong in the passing game that I think lend itself well to PPR. So I agree. If he's there at the end of the third round, I think you take him. I'm not like thrilled maybe in the way that you are, but I do think like he does have some good value at that part of the draft, especially if you can get him there. And there's a lot of upside there if things break correctly for him, just because of the talent that we did see at Clemson. So yeah, I think he's good. I agree. There's like a couple other guys though, I think, before we move on to some news and notes that are interesting to me. What's your take on Saquon here? Because I think for him, like, people kind of want to get back on the train for Saquon because he's been looking really good in practice by all accounts so far in training camp, but he hasn't been healthy in a few years. And like, if he's back to being Saquon and the usage that Saquon got, he has potential to be really good. But I think he fits right around this range too.
Yeah, just checking out Saquon's ADP on Fantasy Pros. He's looking at RB14 in PPR, which is high up there. I see that, so that's around the second round, mid second, early second for Saquon. I feel like it depends on your team construction. I don't necessarily want Saquon as my first running back. So if I was able to take, you know, a more consistent running back in the first pick, then maybe I would look at taking Saquon. I don't necessarily love the volatility of Saquon as my first running back. That I feel like around that range, there's names that offer more consistency. At RB14, you can probably swing a guy, maybe not DeAndre Swift, but someone going a little bit later than him. I don't have the names off the top of my head, but I feel like there's more consistency that can be found around that range. But Saquon, if you can find value for him, maybe at the end of the second, at the 2-3 turn, I think that's a great value. If you have an early pick in the draft, you pick running back, you go wide receiver in your second pick, and then Saquon's available at the turn, I think that's great. I feel like as with a lot of these guys, as training camp goes on, as the preseason goes on, as people see Saquon is rounding back into form, there's a high chance that he's going to ratchet up draft boards, probably get taken in the top 10 among running backs. But I think it depends on your team construction. I wouldn't necessarily love to have Saquon as my first running back.
Yeah, I agree. Saquon, like, he's an interesting player for sure.
Now, looking at that point in the draft around the middle second, going into the third and fourth rounds, it's time to consider taking a quarterback. Josh Allen is the QB1 ranked this season. He finished QB1 last year. ADP around the 24th pick, so just around the end of the second round. Next quarterback around there is Patrick Mahomes at 33. So there is kind of a drop-off between QB1 and QB2 in terms of ADP. But then right after Mahomes, Herbert goes. And then next quarterback is Lamar Jackson at QB4. So there's a little bit of range between these quarterbacks being taken. Allen's up at 24. Mahomes is down at 30. 33, Herbert at 36, and then all the way down at 50, and all the way down at 51 is Lamar Jackson. So there's a lot of range between these quarterbacks. What do you think about taking or investing in an early round, late second round pick on Josh Allen in the draft?
I mean, I'd say absolutely stay away. I don't see Josh Allen as being like, there. I think there's 1 year, maybe like 2 years ago, where you were like, okay, like, Lamar, like, there was a version coming off his MVP season where you were like, this is worth investing in. There was a year where Mahomes, you were like, this is worth investing in. Going back all the way to Peyton Manning in, like, 2014, where you were like, this guy is going to be so much better than everyone else at his position that even regardless of what we know about quarterbacks not being worth it in fantasy, this guy's worth it. I don't think 2022 Josh Allen fits in that category. I mean, yeah, he's led fantasy points for quarterbacks the last two seasons, and, like, you know, he's been in the top 10 in every category pretty much for those last couple years, and, you know, obviously we know his running ability, and he's gonna get rushing touchdowns and pick up yards that kind of separate him, but I don't see him being so different than a Mahomes, a Herbert, or a Lamar this season that it really merits that pick. I mean, like, yeah, he's been really good for a couple years in a row, but quarterbacks, it's just not worth it at this point in the draft. I think you wait on until the fifth, sixth round at the earliest.
Yeah, I've never been a guy that picks quarterbacks early. I think I do like having people in my league that pick quarterbacks early because it leaves more value on the table to scoop up other wide receiver or running back or even tight end position. And I personally think, you know, this is going to go into our next episode a little bit, but I want to wait for quarterback until I can get Trey Lance. I think Trey Lance is going to be a league-winning quarterback, but we can get into all that later. Next quarterbacks off the board after that kind of big three, quote-unquote, with Mahomes, Allen, and Herbert. You have Jackson at 51, and then kind of in the 60 to 70 range, we have four quarterbacks that are around that same range. You have Kyler Murray, Joe Burrow, Jalen Hurts, and Dak Prescott. That's kind of around the range you were thinking about taking a quarterback. Of those four quarterbacks, who are you the highest on at that range?
I think that Lamar is a good value here. You know, he's in a contract year, and while, yeah, they got rid of Hollywood Brown, that's something we'll get to in the next episode with Bateman coming in too. You know, like, I think Lamar is primed for a good season. The contract situation, yeah, it's a little bit messy, but he's not holding out. He's going to be there for the season, and he's going to have a lot to prove, I think. And either way, you know, like, he missed five games last year due to injury. He still had a really solid season. You know, he carried the ball 133 times a season ago for 767 yards. I mean, his rushing output is completely ridiculous. So, You know, like, that's a huge factor. And that was, as I said, in five less games, you know, we just talked about the rushing prowess of Allen. You know, he had more rushes than Allen in those five less games. He plays that over a full season. It's going to be really special how much that he can provide you on the ground, and he's going to have some ridiculous highlight plays. I think that the floor is higher for him because of that rushing ability, and with the passing, you know, maybe you're not going to get the MVP season caliber out of Lamar, but I still think it's worthy of taking him in. If you can get him in that 60 to 70 range, that's the sweet spot.
Yeah, and looking at another rushing quarterback, and one note before I get into that, before you draft, make sure to check out your scoring settings to see if you're in a 4 point per passing touchdown or 6 point per passing touchdown. Because if you're in 4 point per passing touchdown, that really elevates those rushing quarterbacks, Jalen Hurts, Lamar Jackson, Kyler Murray, Trey Lance, these guys that have, you know, the capability to run more than 8 or 9 times a game and get a few touchdowns on the ground. That's an extra 2 points compared to a passing touchdown. In a 6 point passing touchdown league, you know, quarterbacks like Tom Brady, Derek Carr, who aren't going to consistently run in scores, they have more value. But another quarterback that we talked a lot about last year because I had him on my team, Jalen Hurts. In preseason week one, he looked really good. This is going to be a more open, pass-heavy offense. Hurts ran the ball 169 times last season, finishes the QB9. There's a lot of talk on our podcast and among, you know, NFL writers that he had a really solid fantasy season in terms of the running, but NFL wise he didn't look quite ready. The passing was a little bit hesitant, you know, for Jalen Hurts. But in preseason week one, completed 6 of 6 passes for 80 yards and a touchdown. A nice touchdown strike to Dallas Goedert there. Tight end note, I think Dallas Goedert has a lot of upside where he's being drafted. I think he could finish conceivably in the top five at the position. But going back to Jalen Hurts, if this offense can lean more away from Hurts running 15 times a game and go more into, you know, maybe 8 or 9 times, not necessarily, you know, the offense knows Hurts is going to scramble around and try to get 3 yards on the ground or maybe design a few runs where he can get, you know, 10 or 11 yards per carry like we've seen from Lamar Jackson, and then also throw the ball 20 or 35 times a game. You have A.J. Brown in that offense. I think Hurts has the potential here, being as he's drafted, not in the top five of the position. He's being drafted QB7, around the 7 to 10 range between Prescott, Tom Brady, Joe Burrow, around there. He can finish conceivably in the top five. I mean, I can see him having a better fantasy season than Kyler Murray. I think, you know, Joe Burrow depends on the scoring setting. Obviously, Jalen Hurts has the potential with that rushing ability. And also, he looks more poised in the pocket, at least preseason week one he did. He looks like he's more direct in his throws. He looks like he's more assertive in his throws. So I see Jalen Hurts as having a lot of upside at the QB position, someone that if you can get value on him in the 6th or 7th round, is definitely worth taking. And looking at other quarterbacks around Hurts, there's Prescott, like I said. And then we go down a little bit later. This is kind of going to sleeper territory, so we won't talk about Lance as much or Trevor Lawrence. But what do you think about Tom Brady this season? There's a lot of speculation about Brady with the whole Miami Dolphins thing, the whole he's taking time away from training camp because of his wife, who knows. What do you think about Brady here? He's the QB9 off the board, around 80 overall, 80th pick, so around that 7-8 round. What do you think about Brady?
Yeah, I mean, he had 719 pass attempts last season, which is the second most in NFL history. So the he's not slowing down. I mean, yeah, Bruce Arians is out now, so some of that long field passing you expect to maybe become a little bit more balanced. But Brady, I mean, if you're taking him over Aaron Rodgers, Joe Burrow, Russell Wilson, then I don't see it. I mean, like, I think he can be a low-end QB1, but there's just too many things that you mentioned, you know, the retirement, the not retirement. I mean, like, yeah, he's really good again, but he's offering you nothing on the ground, and at some point you wonder, like, can he keep this pace up? I think he's never proven any reason why he wouldn't, but I think there's just less, you know, like, there's less other things you're getting than a guy like a Burrow or maybe a Russell Wilson or even a Matthew Stafford who plays in an explosive offense despite his injury stuff. I think Brady, you want to sit him a little bit. I see, you know, a lot of places have him ranked as like the 7th, 8th quarterback maybe coming off the board. I think that's a little bit high for me. So, yeah, he's going to be consistent. You know, he's going to get a lot of pass attempts and passing touchdowns. But if you're playing in a league with 4 points for a passing touchdown, then I don't see him going off the board before some of those other guys that I mentioned.
Yeah, 4 points for passing touchdown leagues. I mean, a 300-yard, 3-touchdown game is not as many points as you would think. That's only 12 points for the touchdowns. 300 yards is usually 12 points in and of itself for the yards. 24 points, not bad, but you know, you could have a lot more with a rushing quarterback. like I was saying. Now, going into the kind of the middle-ish rounds, you have a guy that who's on my team, the Commanders, who I am very, very much hesitant on, Antonio Gibson, being drafted as the RB21 right after ETN. Antonio Gibson gives me a lot of concern here. I think that there's issues with Brian Robinson coming in, the rookie. And I think also, you know, the fumbling problems, the fact that he fumbled on his second possession of the preseason. Also, you know, they have J.D. McKissic in that backfield, who's going to take receiving yard. He's receiving work. He's going to take third downs. Robinson maybe was going to take some goal line carries from Gibson. I have a lot of concern about Antonio Gibson here. I think the three-headed monster, quote-unquote, in Washington is going to be Gibson leading and then Robinson and McKissic on third downs. But it's entirely plausible that Robinson takes a few first and second down runs, maybe takes a goal line run, maybe, you know, just eats into that value that Gibson had last season. And Robinson, he caught two passes from Wentz in preseason week one. It's entirely conceivable that Robinson takes over goal line, maybe takes over a few first and second down. So Gibson at his ADP at RB21 just gives me a lot of concern.
Yeah, I think this is one where he's going to be falling fast. Maybe if you had your draft a month ago, which, as we said at the top of the podcast, don't do. But if he did, he probably went a lot higher than he's going to go in the next couple weeks. The fumbling issues are real with him. We can get this more on our next episode in terms of the options. You mentioned Robinson that comes up behind him. But Gibson, I think, is a guy that he has real bust potential because he's not playing in an offense that you particularly want any part of in Washington. You really want it because of the high volume. And if the high volume's not there, then, you know, you're not really going to see anything, you know, even – you even look at Ron Rivera, who's literally specifically came out and said he is looking to use Gibson and Robinson as a 1-2 punch, sort of like his running back by committee and D'Angelo Williams and Jonathan Stewart back in Carolina. Like, if you're only drafting Antonio Gibson because of his volume in that offense, and if he's not getting the volume in that offense, then like, what are we even doing here? So I don't really see him as much of a viable play at that pick. I think he's been picked way too high. He probably should go somewhere closer to fifth, sixth round.
Yeah, I agree. Gibson, he, like I said, gives me a lot of pause there in that Washington offense. We kind of made it down around the 50-pick range in terms of running backs and wide receivers. A few more names just to throw out there for you, Maddie. What are your thoughts on Courtland Sutton? I am very, very high on Sutton this season. Russell Wilson coming in. Sutton is probably going to take over that DK Metcalf-esque role. He has the profile for it. Obviously, a lot of injury concerns here. Sutton going to wide receiver 20, round 54 overall. Tell me what you think about Courtland Sutton.
Well, the Tim Patrick ACL injury is a game changer here. This happens a couple weeks ago, and it really, for both Judy and Sutton, it really makes them skyrocket up. Judy and Sutton have a pretty similar ADP at this point, but I think that Sutton's the guy. By all indications at training camp, Sutton's been lining up as wide receiver one. He's been Russell Wilson's guy, and he's had a lot of production over the last couple of seasons, really without having consistent quarterback play. He's going to benefit the most by Russell Wilson having that consistent force, and I think, like, I'm really looking forward to seeing what Sutton can do. I think he's a great value if you can get him sometime in the fourth round. Like, I think he's a lot of good value, and I think he's going to be a really, really big addition this season for the Broncos. And I think, like I mentioned it before, obviously you never want to see an injury. I actually thought Tim Patrick was going to have a really good season. But without him there, Courtland Sutton's the guy to step up, and I think he's going to benefit the most from Wilson.
Yeah, I think Courtland Sutton has value at wide receiver 20. Names going around where he's going. Mike Williams at wide receiver 19. Metcalf at wide receiver 18, I think, is horrifically overvalued.
Yeah, that's a terrible pick.
For Metcalf, I would take Sutton over him in a heartbeat. Chris Godwin at wide receiver 21. There's a lot of pause there as well with the ACL injury. He's going to be back for the first few weeks of the season. And also Brandon Cooks at wide receiver 22. Cooks is a guy I like a lot as well, I think. He's going to have that PPR floor that you love in those category of leagues. But around there as well, in terms of running backs and with the wide receivers, you got Sun, and then you also got Joe Burrow's going around there, Kyler Murray, and then A.J. Dillon, the guy you mentioned, is actually going RB25 around the 53rd pick.
Too low.
We mentioned a lot of RB by committees last season. That was kind of a segment for us. Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon, there was a lot of speculation about them. Jones definitely took a lot, probably around 60% of the snaps, and then Dillon, when he was on the field, was more of that bruising back. But he has pretty good hands as well. He didn't drop a lot of targets from Aaron Rodgers. Looking at A.J. Dillon, you mentioned before there is a lot of value there at RB25. Tell me what you think about Dillon.
I just think Dillon's a great value. I think he's, you know, one of the best picks that you can have. If you can get him later on, this could be, like, I just think he's really good. I mentioned this before. I think we're just overthinking it when we talk about how good Jones is going to be compared to Dillon. I mean, like, he fully replaced Jamal Williams as the Aaron Jones number two last year. And then, like, he was 20th amongst running backs in the league in general. And carries, and like he was a good receiver. I think we talked about that last year, how like he had 34 receptions. He was supposed to be a running only kind of guy, and then like he was really effective in the passing game. He's a big guy. Obviously, like, his value was only really high if Jones goes out, and this is true with a lot of these committees. Like, if Jones is out, then Dillon's really high. If Dillon's out, then Jones is really high. Like, if you roster Jones, though, you need to have Dillon on your team, and it's worth overdrafting, I think, just because we don't really know how it's going to play out between those two. And in this year without Davante Adams and a changing landscape in the Green Bay offense, I think Dillon is really a great value. Like, he had 187 carries this year. I expect that to only go up this season. I mean, even that came with a couple games where he was the main guy with Jones out. But even regardless of that, I think he's going to go up this year, and I think he gets a bigger workload. And I think he's a great value to be your RB2/flex kind of play if you don't nub one of those guys earlier. Like, he's a good fallback, actually, because he's going to be consistent. He's going to deliver a solid 10 points for you, I think, every week.
Yeah, Dillon, just going back into last year, looking a little bit under the hood there, he had a few games above 20 touches. Week 10 and week 12, he had 20-plus touches, 50-plus percent of the snap share there, 10 red zone touches in week 10, 5 in week 12, and overall, he got a lot. He got 46 red zone touches, and you said, what, 140-something carries? Like, he's utilized in the red zone. He's a huge running back. He's comps to maybe a guy like Derrick Henry, 6 goal line touches there for A.J. Dillon. He is the goal line back of this offense, I think that's for sure. He has breakaway runs. You know, he for his size, his speed is kind of insane. Breakaway runs, he had 5 last season in limited touches. Breakaway run rate of 2.7%, 56 evaded tackles last season. Like, the talent is not a question for A.J. Dillon. It's just, how is this backfield going to shake up? I think it's going to be kind of how it was last year. Jones and Dillon essentially split time, maybe 60-40 on the side of Jones. But Jones got a lot of receiving work. The receiving floor is there for Aaron Jones. Dillon got a lot of those touchdowns. He also broke away a few runs there for Green Bay. So I think Dillon has value, and I do think it is very interesting that Jones is going as high as he is.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think last guy here before we wrap this one up, there's been a lot of buzz around Darnell Mooney and where he's going to go, because, you know, Mooney was pretty much the only bright spot on the Bears a season ago. He was a fifth-round pick a couple seasons ago, but he got 27% of the team's targets, and that's 10th amongst all wide receivers, and that probably is only going to go up this year. They really have very few other people on this team. He's, you know, going somewhere in most leagues in the fourth round, right around that 50th pick range. But in a PPR league, I mean, he got 140 targets a season ago, 81 receptions. I think that 81 receptions number is, like, absolutely going to climb. I think he could be a really good value. So he has so little competition for targets. He's the no doubt wide receiver one in this offense. And, you know, there's no Allen Robinson anymore. So what's your Mooney take here before we wrap things up?
Yeah, I've been seeing a lot of good things about Darnell Mooney. Justin Fields is looking to be more of a precision passer, try and get the ball to his weapons a little bit more. I think Mooney's going to be good. There could be, the only concern I would have with Mooney is the quarterback. He's going at wide receiver 25, which is solid, but then wide receivers going around him, like, you can conceivably get a Brandon Cooks where Darnell Mooney is going. I think there's a lot more consistency and stability with Cooks. Mooney has a lot of upside, though. That's fair. I mean, the deep ball prowess for Mooney is there. We've seen him haul in, you know, some amazing deep passes. And then also, I think he's going to finish out pretty solid. It just depends on the quarterback, and I think the play calling is going to be better on the Bears. I think the Bears are projected to be better than they were last year. And so I think Mooney's going to be good. A lot of stuff under the hood, makes you think that Mooney's going to be great. So, on that note, that's going to be it for this edition of the Fantasy Finessers podcast. Thank you, Maddie, for joining me as always. We'll be back in just a few days, talking about some sleepers, breakouts, and busts for this 2022 fantasy season. Maddie, got anything else for me before we sign off?
No, that's pretty much it. Good luck in the first rounds of your draft, and we'll be back with some more advice for the later rounds in a few days.
And that is that for Maddie Watchman. I am Colin Kapoor signing off on this latest edition of the Fantasy Finessers Podcast.